Welcome to the Inventory Nation podcast, a show designed to bring you the incredible voices and stories of veterinary professionals coast to coast, all while helping you to manage and control your inventory. I'm your host, Nicole Claussen, coach, advisor, and champion for veterinary teams and their inventory. Joining you live from the mountains of Montana, welcome to the show. Hello, welcome back to the Inventory Nation podcast. I am so excited that you're here, so honored that you are tuning in. So in this episode, I am absolutely delighted to introduce you to Dr. Eve Harrison. She is just fantastic, and I am so thrilled she's on the show. So Dr. Eve is a seasoned full-time house call veterinarian in Los Angeles. She is one of only a tiny handful of pioneers practicing true veterinary concierge medicine. She is the founder of the online CE course, the House Call Vet Academy, and offers coaching and consulting to help veterinarians nourish not only their patients, but themselves. So welcome to the show. I'm so glad that you're here.
Thank you so much. I'm super excited to be here. And you are fantastic as well. I've been following you for a while. So I'm like, yay. Inventory Nation podcast.
I appreciate that. So tell us your story. How did you get started in vet med? Where it kind of like led you to where you are now?
So my story is kind of windy. I've kind of been down a lot of different paths. They were all kind of false starts. And I guess I'll take that back. None of them were really false starts. They all sort of ended up leading me to where I am now. So I can't really regret any of it. But I first started out thinking I was going to be a veterinary surgeon. I did an internship and I did a portion of a surgical residency. It was not good for me. So I'm, needless to say, not a surgeon. I do have some surgeon training. I have 2 years of surgical residency training under my belt, which I'm really proud of, but I'm not a surgeon. And to kind of heal from that experience, I went down yet another path and I became a yoga teacher. And I taught for a few years while I was doing relief work and kind of figuring out, like, what the hell I was going to do in this profession, because like so many of us, I was lost and I didn't know where I fit in. I just wasn't feeling like my true self ever, you know, until actually fairly recently. But I went down all of these paths to try and find what felt right. And the yoga helped. And then somewhere along the way, I ended up doing house call practice, which kind of like, it sort of found me and I found it. It was one of those like perfect unions where it's like, oh, this is where I belong. Everything in my life has culminated in this, you know? And I know I'm not alone in that feeling. I'm pretty sure almost everyone who's become a house call vet comes to that same like kind of wonderful moment. So hope that answers your question.
Amazing.
And the story goes on from there, of course, but I think that's a good start, right?
Yeah. Isn't it like interesting where it's like, we kind of like have it in our mind of like, oh, this is what I'm going to do. And then like life happens and it's like, actually, no, it's like, that's not actually what's right for me.
Yeah. Oh, that has so been my story. That sort of like, I think I know what's going to happen and I think I'm in control of my life, but actually I am to some extent, but there are clearly forces outside of purely my will making things happen, you know? I mean, I did, totally. I thought I was going to be a wildlife vet for a while. And, you know, so it just like went down so many paths and I, you know, you get it. You get it.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, if somebody like told me that I was going to be like an inventory consultant, like teaching other people, I would have like laughed at you. I thought that would have been like the funniest thing. I'm like, that's the funniest joke. But here I am.
I know. I was like, that is such like what you do is such a special super niche thing. Like what I do is niche, but you are super, super niche. And like, I don't think either of us could have ever imagined ourselves doing what we're doing.
No, I thought I wanted to be like an ICU nurse. Well, here I am. So before we kind of dive in, what is concierge medicine? So like, what does that mean for the clients and the patients? And like, how is that different, I guess, from like, you know, what does that mean, I guess?
Yeah. So that's one of my favorite questions. And I'm glad you asked. And people like to ask that question because it's relatively new to our profession. I mean, it is and it isn't. On one hand, what I believe, and I'll explain what I mean by this in just a minute, I believe that all of us have been truly providing concierge medicine for a long, long time to our clients, but we haven't been monetizing that or having a business or a pricing structure set up to capture any sort of appropriate compensation for the work that we're doing that is truly in the human world what would be considered concierge level care. So I wanted to start with that. And then I also wanted to say that concierge medicine is a little bit more established in human medicine. And it's taking a little bit of a hold in veterinary medicine pretty recently. I'm definitely not the first concierge veterinarian, but I'm really one of a very small handful of folks who are practicing, I mean, I guess proper concierge service. So there are a lot of misconceptions. There's a lot of, well, I guess there's actually a lot of definitions like that you can hold for what that means. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people will use the terms house call vet and concierge vet interchangeably. Or they might use the term concierge vet to mean this is a high level of care. Cool. Some people do that. Classically, what concierge medicine is that it describes very specifically this is a membership-based service. You're paying a retainer monthly or annually to even have access to me. So it's like, you need the keys to the kingdom to have me do anything, you know? So it's a kind of a really special way to monetize how much I know I give. I'm not any more special than any other veterinarian or veterinary technician or veterinary clinic or service. I just give my all, and I know what it costs me emotionally, physically, yeah. Financially, I know what that costs me. And so in this type of setup, I can do what I do and provide what in human medicine would be considered top-notch, high-level, concierge-level care that probably all of us do, and be compensated for it and give it a name. And, you know, as soon as you give something a name, you can identify it, you can work with it, you can shape it, and you can make it what you want it to be. Until it has a name, it's very amorphous and hard to, let alone monetize something that doesn't have a name, right? But as soon as you name it, like, I'm practicing concierge medicine. This is really high touch point care. It's not just that, you know, I give my all. I'm the type of person that just will bend over backwards. Like, you want me to care for your animal. That's how I am as a vet. I give my all. I care. I cry. I cry for my patients. Like, when they die, like, I feel that in my soul, like they're my own. And I think I just needed a way, if I was going to continue doing veterinary medicine, to feel appropriately compensated, to almost in terms of how I market what I do, to be like, no, this is something special, folks, and you're gonna pay for it. You know, like what my value. That's my value, and that's how I sort of recoup what I put in, you know? I hope that makes sense. And I guess one other thing, people often ask, so how is a membership different from a wellness plan? And it is a good question. I had to ask myself that, like, am I just a big wellness plan vet? And, you know, a wellness plan comes with certain things, but a concierge vet, you have to pay that membership to even have access to me at all. It's not just like, you opt in and you get certain perks or this number of, you know, appointments or this number of flea meds per year. You know, it's much more holistic and all inclusive, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make a lot of sense. It's yeah, it's just kind of like paying for access to you, because I would think, you know, as a veterinarian, as a veterinary professional, like you mentioned, we give so much of ourselves to our patients, to our clients, you know, emotionally, physically, spiritually, just everything. And I would think, like, years after years of if not being compensated for that would start to make you feel like resentful and, you know, be really challenging, you know, to continue without kind of like, yeah, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, it makes complete sense because I lived it. I became resentful and I became, I burnt out and I felt I'm giving my all because this is all I know how to do. This is the only ethical way I know how to be a veterinarian. This is what I want to give. And so if that's how I do vet, you know, vet med, then, and I want to stick with it, I have to find a way so that I don't feel resentful anymore and that my time is appropriately monetized and compensated. And it helped. It really helped my, I mean, even just as a house call vet, where I can control my own prices and things like that, I can raise my prices to the point where I feel not resentful. I feel my work has been compensated appropriately, but there's still something that hasn't been captured and that wasn't captured or that didn't make me feel like this whole thing is a cohesive, equal exchange of resources, my time, energy, life, money, respect, you know, all that stuff. It wasn't until I kind of sculpted my practice from kind of like standard house call practice into concierge that I felt kind of like the whole thing aligned for me. It just felt like, wow, okay, this is really, really working for me now.
I think that's incredible that you found something that like is working so well. Did you find it challenging to like your messaging to your clients to kind of like share what concierge medicine is and kind of like get clients and patients kind of like understanding and excited about that? Did you find that was challenging or was it fairly easy?
That's also a really good question. And I kind of think about it a lot, like, how did I make this transition? And I also want to kind of like acknowledge the fact that technically I'm a hybrid concierge practice. So I do have some clients on a sliding scale who I did not kind of force them into concierge service. So I kept some of those clients. And, you know, generally concierge service is thought of for kind of wealthier folks. Or folks who have means to pay, you know, a large chunk of money at a time for a more all-inclusive service or level of access. And to me, I felt that while the concierge model is what is so meaningful and aligned for me, I also think that accessibility to veterinary care is a very important thing to consider. And you know, I don't want to only be working with the privileged. I want to give in many ways. And so I have these two components to my practice. And I only recently, my newest clients must join my concierge service. And so that's an easy one, you know, relatively easy. That's not a transition. That's just this is what it is. Take it or leave it, right? And then you have people who take it and you have people who leave it. And so, you know, that's okay. And that's how it always is going to be in business, you know, especially if you're offering a really special niche kind of service, right? And then I would say for my clients who already existed, and those are really the ones that I kind of transitioned that came with me. For a long time, it was an option. I had a concierge option. And many people opted in. And then at a certain point, I said, okay, except for my sliding scale folks, like who are like kind of like just like salt of the earth good people. They just don't have a lot of money. Except for them, I was like, okay, you're in or you're out. I'm going full concierge, your choice. So that was kind of, there were like steps and tiers, and there was kind of like an interesting process, and it went in phases. And I've mentioned to you before kind of different iterations of my business. They've kind of gone in different directions. And that's one of the ways that I've kind of changed it up over time and kind of gradually figured out how I have what I have now.
Yeah. That is so cool. I love that.
Thank you.
I just think it's so cool when other people just kind of like find really what works for them and is sustainable for them professionally and personally. So I think that's amazing.
Thank you. And I'm glad you said the word sustainability, because that's one of my like personal keyword buzzwords that's like speaks to my soul. And like, I think partially one of the reasons that I can still afford to have my clients on the sliding scale, who are, they're really not paying that much, you know, and I've never raised their prices ever, you know, and that's, I mean, in business, you usually have to do that, but it's because I have the concierge side that I can afford to do that, you know? Mm-hmm. So while it's like out of the kindness of my heart, I have the funds to be able to have a sustainable business and live my life, a profitable, sustainable business, to be able to live my life and to be able to also give a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that was really important to me. I think when I started my company was to also be really sustainable. So like with my logbooks, you know, I plant a tree, I take like pounds of trash out of the ocean, you know, but then also it's like, you know, how can we think about our careers professionally and, you know, to make them sustainable as well, so that we're not like burning out or feeling resentful or, you know, because I feel like as a vet professional, we deal with very, very big emotions all day long, you know?
Yeah.
So, and it's like the huge swing of it, right? It's very rarely where you have like a very neutral appointment. It's either maybe like really big excitement from a new puppy or like, you know, the owners are terrified, you know, it's just like a huge swing. You know, so it's like, how do we care for ourselves in the process of that?
Oh, I just got like chills because I was like, yes, yes, that is it. And I don't think we acknowledge enough, just as an industry, as a profession, that the work we do is inherently emotional. Whether it's good emotion, bad emotion, strong emotion, it's emotion. Like, we're dealing with the most beloved, family, cherished, like, thing, living being, in a person or family's life. And they come to us not, I mean, sometimes when they're healthy, but often because they're not healthy. And that's, it's hard. It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's very joyous when they get better. It's, but at the same time, you know, it's personal, it's emotional, it's deep. It's really, really deep in a way that most folks don't really understand, except for those of us who've been through it. Right.
Yeah. 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 Cause it's like, you feel so, I mean, I don't know about, like, I don't want to speak for anyone else, but for me personally, it was like, you know, you feel so much all day long, you know, it's like,
oh yeah,
you know,
I very so it's like much how relate. You, yeah, yep, yep, yep.
It's like, how do we kind of like navigate that?
How do we rein it in? I know.
Totally. So how do you think that, you know, other veterinarians or other vet professionals can like kind of cultivate that sustainability within their own careers?
I think that's a great question, and it's a big question. And I think that there's so many components to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that owning your own practice for me has been absolutely the end all be all. I don't think I could have ever sort of self-actualized and found my own personal balance and what I needed if I had someone above me telling me what I had to do. You know, just any boss at all. Like I think I need, you know, there's almost this sort of learned helplessness that people can have when they're trapped in a system that doesn't give them all of the tools or all of the freedom to flourish and be their whole self. And you know, it's just really about freedom. And I think that when you work for yourself, there's responsibility, yeah, but the freedom is, I just don't know any other way to get that level of being really comfortable in your own skin and your own life and knowing your value and, you know, all of these processes that I went through. Some of that, I think, happened by virtue of, for the very first time, there's no one above me to tell me I'm wrong. No one above me to tell me I can't do that. You know, I mean, to a limit, of course, like I'm not obviously going out and like, like doing stupid things or like breaking laws or, you know, but like within the bounds of like good ethical medicine and ethical behavior towards other human beings and following the laws and all regulations and everything within those boundaries, I've been able to just soar for the very first time in my life since I had my own business. I would say for folks who don't have their own business, that's okay. You can have your own business. Make sure that whatever situation you're in, you are being encouraged and not beaten down, and that you have as much possible freedom as possible. Freedom, I think, because of exactly what you said, that high emotionality of the work we're doing, I think the balance, the counterbalance in my world is freedom. To, if I'm going through all this, I can then take self-care in this way. And that's completely at my discretion. I can see this many appointments. I can see appointments on this day or not. I can buy this inventory if I want or not. I can choose what inventory I want to be working on. I can choose how I write my medical records. I can choose when I write my medical records. I can choose what clients to see. I can choose, you know. So I think that there's that sort of connection between balancing intensity and high emotionality with freedom and sort of like a creative freedom to create how your life looks every day, you know?
Yes.
So I think having a boss that like is so on board with that and just, you know, I don't even know what's possible, to be honest, but I think if you're not self-employed, just find a boss that's incredible and values freedom, or, you know, will help you understand your own value and live your own potential out, if that makes sense.
It makes total sense. You know, I think there's such a huge opportunity for leaders in vet med to really change the narrative and change the culture that has been in practices for so long, and to recognize, you know, like this is a, you know, we need to be people and people first. You know, of course we're there for the animals and our patients, but we can't care for our patients if we aren't caring for ourselves, you know, in like a, you know, sustainable way. You know, because I just know, like, when I was in practice, I did not recognize like how to care for myself, because you know, when I was younger and I didn't realize like what the emotional kind of like impact it had. And I didn't really understand like how to like navigate and care for myself. So I feel like as leaders in vet med, we have such a huge opportunity to like help people, you know, to your point, it's like utilize and realize their full potential, but also like how to like care for ourselves, like in these big emotional moments, that I think, you know, I think there's a lot of potential to do a lot better in vet med, but I feel like it's a really exciting time because I feel like there's a lot of people awakening to this and awakening to like this process and this thought and methodology. That's just very exciting.
I totally agree with that. I think there's I think this is a leadership issue for sure. And yeah, I mean, I guess if we're talking about bosses, we're talking about leadership, aren't we? And I think that it makes me so happy to see people talking about this and the idea that we can empower our employees, we can empower our vets, we can allow them to have boundaries within within a structure if they're working within not their own structure, right? And it's interesting. I thought about this a lot. It's such a, like, it's almost becoming cliched, you know, like there's a lot of companies out there, like startups and corporates that talk big time about work-life balance and empowerment and giving vets and techs great quality of life, but they don't often know what that means. in my experience, like a lot of places talk about it. A lot of places talk the talk, but they don't walk the talk, right? They don't walk the walk. And so I think that's where our challenge is now. It's very easy for anyone to give lip service and say, yeah, work-life balance, we have that. But let's right. see it. Let's see it, you know?
Yeah. And I think even that is just helping people understand what that means for them, right? Because like work-life balance yes. for me means something totally different for somebody else. Mm. And I think we can't really have true life work balance if we haven't even addressed what that means and looks like for all walks of life.
Oh, you're so right about that. Thank you for saying that. It is such a unique thing. It's such a unique thing. You're so right. Yes. And that's kind of why, I mean, this is kind of like a hill I'm dying on here, but like, I don't really know how other than owning your own business to really live that to your greatest potential. Cause otherwise your freedom is, and your idea of what work-life balance is at the mercy of whatever leader you're under. And unless it's like mm-hmm. really perfectly aligned, that's a really real challenge, you know? And not to say that it can't be done. I just don't know how. That's why I wouldn't ever lead a massive team of folks, because I myself just like value my own freedom so much, like on a deep level, like not in the sense of like America, it's my rights to not wear a mask. I'm not talking about that, but I'm talking about within the boundaries of, again, of like sort of respectful behavior towards everyone and, you know, being able to honor my ethics, my boundaries, what I feel is my ideal work-life balance. And so mm-hmm. I'm really glad that you mentioned that, because it's such an individual thing. And when we're already under the weight of all of those emotional things, that need to self-care, whatever that looks like, becomes greater. And I think that's the challenge where when you work with the team. And I have the utmost respect to folks who are, you know, who work in a team, who lead a team, and, you know, hats off to you, because that is hard, in my opinion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it just is ever more increasingly challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, I think a theme that I've kind of like see lately happening is a lot of clients who are maybe not a best fit for our practice, and mm-hmm. clients who are aligned with our clinic's values, who, you know, and I feel like sometimes they're the scarcity, right? Of, oh my gosh, if I, you know, maybe like release this client or fire this client, then I'll never get more, or, you know, then maybe my business will suffer. So like, what are your thoughts on that? And what advice do you have for others who are kind of like afraid of releasing people that aren't a good match for our practice?
I'm so glad you asked this question. My favorite subject ever. I think you're absolutely right that, I guess on some level, it is a scarcity mindset. And, you know, as an inventory person, you think about scarcity and abundance quite a bit, I'm sure.
Yes.
In very physical terms. That's interesting. I think it's very normal for people to be afraid that if they let go of clients, that the money will go away. That's a very normal human way of processing the world, and a normal concern and fear to have. And I would say at the same time, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a rule, the law of, you know, abundance or the law of attraction or, you know, what have you with some of the language out there. But I've found that when I let go of the clients that harm me, I have time. I have emotional space. I have clarity. I feel better. And when you feel better mm-hmm. and you have more time and you have more clarity, usually what happens is you find the right clients. They come to you. It's like they fill the void. You know, it's like, I don't know if this is a metaphysical thing or not, but in just very simple practical terms, if you have space in your practice and you have the time and the energy, to be hungry for new clients, which happens when you get rid of the folks who are harming you, usually you'll have success and you'll find better clients. So, I mean, you alluded to this very thing, that when you get rid of abusive people, and abusive is subjective, if it's just not a good match, if it's just this person stresses me out, they're a good, wonderful person, they love their animal, they have money, they just, it just doesn't gel, I don't want to see this person, you know, that's okay too. And when you get rid of all of that kind of thing, whether they're literally berating you, saying hurtful things, saying you're just in it for the money, or whether they don't have enough money to pay you and they're guilt tripping, whatever it is, when you let that go, it's like uncanny. As soon as you let it go, there's the next client, and that's a good client, and like things change. And I mean, just as a testament to that, I've had multiple waves of sort of like mass firing of clients from my practice. And, you know, when I started out, I didn't know how to screen properly. I didn't know I should screen. I tolerated whatever because I was hungry for, you know, to build my practice. And I, you know, didn't value myself. You know, it's like, okay, this is how people act. They get stressed, they're in grief, they take it out on you. That's normal. No, actually not. Not everyone who's stressed, not everyone who grieves, not everyone who's frustrated has to take it out on you. And that was a hard lesson. I learned that many, many, many times. And because of that, now I'm very quick to fire. Someone makes me feel uncomfortable. I mean, I have client communication skills. I can conflict resolve. But if it turns out that it's more trouble than it's worth, or the client has a habit or a history of responding in a certain way that I have to always be managing them, no, no, I don't have time for that. And I know at this point that as soon as I get rid of, you know, or just let that client move on, they're going to find a better match too, honestly, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's kind of a win-win. But I've had many waves of just like over COVID, I must have fired 20 people. And not because they were terrible, but because it just didn't feel good to me anymore for whatever reason. And after I did that, what's been happening, the most absolutely incredible A++++ clients have been flooding into my practice. Like, I can't even believe it, you know? It's just a thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think especially for teams where it's not just the boss who makes the decision about who we're dealing with. It's the whole team that has to interface with that person. So if they're, I've been in such corporate situations where there was a client who was racist and the staff was not empowered to fire that client on the spot. That's, I was doing a relief shift and I was like, my God, if I could, if I had the ability to fire this person immediately, if this were my practice, it would be done by now. And I went home and I was like, I can't do relief work anymore. This is insane. But I mean, it's when it affects an entire team, you should, in my opinion, be even quicker to fire a person because that has ripples beyond just you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because you just think about like a client who's like very clearly like not aligned with your practice, right. Let alone somebody who is like just bad juju, you know, racist, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like, think about how much that detriments, like not only like the individuals who are interacting with them, but like your culture as a whole. And it just like, then when you like release that person, then like you said, you have like the time, space, and the capacity to like kind of like bring those good clients who do align with your values and do align with what you are like calling out to. That gives them the opportunity. But if you're like stuck in this space of like dealing with these not aligned clients, then it's like, then those really good clients are missing out on the opportunity.
Yeah, they're literally hogging up physical space and emotional space. And it's incredible. One negative interaction with a client can have me reeling for a week, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Just one email from a client that's sort of like, are you being passive aggressive or not? I'm not sure. Are you trying to guilt trip me or not? And you know, clients do that. And if I have to like gaslight myself into being like, oh no, they didn't mean that. Like, no, no, all clients act like that. No, 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 no. It's so much wasted energy for me, you know? And at this point, if I have someone that makes me feel like I can't trust my feelings or I don't know what they mean by something. If it's not just like, clearly they're happy with my work, we're good. If there's a problem, you're very clearly telling me what it is and we worked through it. If it's something like a little shady or, you know, just something that makes me feel like, I don't know what's going on here. That takes up a lot of space in my mind that I could be using to take damn good care of my other patients and to give love, so much love to my wonderful clients that love me back, you know? Like, I just, who has time for that?
Right. Too much rent-free space up in my brain that I'm not willing to, like, give out.
That's exactly it, the rent-free space in the brain.
Candle. I just love, like, how you are just intentionally creating this practice that you love and, like, that I just love, like, hearing the process of, like, what you have done to really, like, intentionally cultivate your business, your career, your professional life. I think it's amazing.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And it feels good to hear that because I fought hard for that. You know, I learned a lot of that in such an unpleasant way. And, you know, yes. I'm not special. I just, like, got burned so badly that I couldn't take it anymore and I made some changes, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So, now, you then teach other veterinarians how to have their own practice in the House Call Vet Academy. So I probably take all those unpleasant lessons that you learned and teach them so that other people don't have to go through that.
That's exactly it. That was the heart of the whole thing. The heart of the whole thing was everything I went through, the years that I was hurt, you know, and depressed and anxious and doubting myself and taking abuse from people, whether it was overt or covert. You know, people can abuse you covertly without it being a big red sign. I am abusing you, you know, like, and that can be some of the trickiest,
right?
Because you're not sure if you believe if it's real or not, you know, when you start to doubt yourself. But that those experiences and that pain and rejection and, you know, through surgical residency and, you know, periods of time where I was poor, like really, really poor, you know, cause I just didn't know how to manage my inventory. Like I could have used you back then and I didn't know what, you know, I just didn't know how to run a business and why should I have, because there wasn't anything available for the type of business I was trying to start. And so when I kind of realized like things felt really aligned for me and hey, I'm not poor. I'm not at all poor. How did that happen? Wow. And, you know, like I'm also happy and I love my clients and I feel like I overcame some sort of mountain and something just like clicked. I was like, holy crap. Like everyone doesn't have to go through this experience. I have so many things that you know, taught me lessons that why don't I just share this with people? And so I created the House Call Vet Academy so that people who are in the exact same shoes I was in, and I know there are many, like I keep saying this, so I'm not special. I'm just one of a lot of people who are on the same similar track and just need a little bit of help so that they don't have to go further down before they start to go up, you know, because that can happen. That can absolutely happen. I also did get taken advantage of by kind of a corporate startup house call company because I didn't know how to start a house call practice. I wanted to desperately, and I didn't believe in myself. And so I got really badly taken advantage of them by them. And that's another reason that I created the academy so that nobody has to go work for someone else because they don't know what to do, right? Like you have a dream. Here's how to do it. You can do this. You know, you don't need to work for some techie guy who is not a veterinarian, doesn't understand the veterinary, you know, mindset, is just in it for the money. Literally, that's who's just in it for the money. And so I just was so burned and moved by how much that experience harmed me that I just wanted to create a resource so that other vets don't get in that situation, you know?
Yeah, I love that so much. So where can people go to, like, learn more about the House Call Vet Academy?
So there's a few places. My website has it, www.drevharrison.com, drevharrison.com. And that has links to the course, the House Call Vet Academy. I'm also on Instagram as the House Call Vet Academy and on Facebook as the House Call Vet Academy. And what else? I think those are the main ways that people can find out about the Academy. And then I'm about to launch, oh my God, I've been working on this for 6 months, the Concierge Vet Academy Mastermind.
Oh, that's so, so exciting.
Yes. Oh my God. It's not that I've been dragging my feet, but there's just so much to say that I'm just like, how do I contain all of this? Oh my God. But that's like my next baby that's coming. So that will also be on my website as well for anyone interested.
Yeah, I cannot wait to hear more about that. And so for anyone who's listening, I will link all of the links to learn more on the show notes. You can find them at vetlogic.co/podcast, and you can see all the links there. So, Dr. Eve, it was so great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for such a wonderful conversation. Truly appreciate your time, and I love what you're doing in VetMed. So thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to have a conversation with a person who's like-minded and also a co-entrepreneur as well. So it's really awesome to have this conversation with you. And thank you so much for having me on.
Of course. My pleasure.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Inventory Nation podcast and spending your time with me. I know your time is valuable and in short supply, so it truly is an honor. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe or leave a review. Be sure to visit vetlogic.co/podcast to access the show notes and discover additional links and resources. See you next time.